We're in the book of Exodus, beginning chapter 4 this morning. Is it warm in here to y'all? No. I know I don't even ask that. Exodus chapter 4. You may see an outline laying around. I encourage you to pick it up, fill it out, follow along. You see, I've entitled the message, "The Fire Grows Cold." We won't actually talk about that idea until right at the end of the sermon. But you remember kind of where we are at in the book of Exodus. Moses has gone to live and been raised in the house of Pharaoh. He comes out to check on his fellow Israelites and finds one of them being abused, and so he attacks or assaults the Egyptian and kills him. And he thought no one knew about it, but someone did. And the word gets back to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh is ready to kill him. So Moses flees and runs to the land of Midian, where he meets a young lady who will eventually become his wife, and they are settled in Midian, have a son, actually have two sons, and he's there for 40 years. And after the end of the 40 years, or about the end of the 40 years, God appears to Moses in the burning bush, you remember that account, and tells Moses, he wants him to go back, he's going to lead him back to the land of Egypt, and lead his people out, lead them back to the land of Canaan that God had promised them. And Moses, you remember, doesn't want to do it. Moses is afraid. Moses has excuses that he just is not the person to do that. And that's kind of where we have picked up last week. Now, if you see on your outline, I've got a number of statements listed on the introduction. Now, these are statements that God has told Moses. A couple weeks ago, I mentioned at the end of John's sermon that God tells Moses what is going to happen. God doesn't tell Moses, "This is what I hope happens. This is my plan, and we'll see how, you know, things go. We might have to adjust my plan." Now, God tells Moses these things will happen. Now, let's just read through them and read them as such that God said this will take place. This is the second dot there on your outline. "I have seen the oppression of my people." God is aware of what's going on in the Israelite people being oppressed. God says, "I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people out." I will send you. Doesn't say, "I will send you if you feel like going." He says, "I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people out." Next he says, "I will certainly be with you." The next one, "You shall serve God on this mountain." We're in the Sinai Peninsula, I assume. And when Moses and the Israelite people come out, they're going to be passing through the same area. And God tells them, "You will serve me, and the people will serve me here on this mountain. The Israelite elders will heed to your voices." You'll go back and gather the elders of the people. He says, they will listen to you. They will accept what you say. The next one, "The king of Egypt will not let you go." Now, this is the first one. It doesn't sound so good, isn't it? "The king of Egypt will not let you go." Then he says, "I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with mighty and wondrous deeds." And then the next one, "After I strike him, he will let you go." Okay, so we're kind of the long way around to get to there, but he's going to let them go. "I will give the Israelites favor in the sight of the Egyptian people." You will not leave Egypt empty-handed. The Israelite women will ask their Egyptian neighbor for silver, for gold, and clothing, and it will be given to them. As you leave Egypt, you will plunder the Egyptians. Now, God tells him all of these things. God is declaring these things will happen. How do you think Moses should feel that things are going to turn out? You would think, Moses would think, I can be a part of this, right? I can handle this because God is going to handle it. God has told me all the things that would happen. But we know that's not the case, as we saw last week. We continue this week in chapter 4, the first 17 verses. So let's read our text. After God said all these things, then Moses answered and said, but suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say, the Lord has not appeared to you. So the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? He said, a rod. He said, cast it on the ground. So he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from it. Same thing I would do. Then the Lord said to Moses, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. And he reached out his hand and caught it. And it became a rod in his hand. That they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Furthermore, the Lord said to him, now put your hand in your bosom. So he puts it in his hand in his shirt. He's put his hand in his bosom, and when he took it out, his hand was leprous like snow. Have you ever seen pictures of, or maybe the real thing, of a grossly leprous person? It's not a pretty sight. And he said, put your hand in your bosom again. Put this leprous hand back against your skin, in your bosom. So he put his hand in his bosom again, and he drew it out of his bosom, and behold, it was restored like his other flesh. Then it will be, if they do not believe you, nor heed the message of the first sign, that they may believe the message of the latter sign. And it shall be, if they do not believe even these two signs, or listen to your voice, that you shall take water from the river and pour it on the dry land. The water which you take from the river will become blood on the dry land. Then Moses said to the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant. But I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. So the Lord said to him, who has made God's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say. But he said, oh, my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is not Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak well, and look, he is also coming out to meet you. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. Now you shall speak to him and put words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and I will teach you what you shall do. So he shall be your spokesman to the people, and he himself shall be as a mouth for you, and you shall be to him as God. You shall take this rod in your hand with which you shall do the signs. We'll stop there for this morning. This morning, I was going through the church, and I saw this. It seemed like when I saw it that God, just my heart started pounding heavily, and God told me, he said, take this in the auditorium. that's no big deal. And I feel like God was saying, John, take this. And I saw that wall there, and he said, I want you to throw this into that wall. I'll show you and the people I am still a mighty God. I've never had anything like this happen to me before. But God, it was so strong. God said, take it and throw it into the wall. Is everybody listening? What were you thinking? Some of you people who are visitors are thinking, what am I doing here? Some of you who are kind of new were thinking, I'm glad that I got this figured out before we got too settled down here. Some of you along the more gullible lines, like my daughter-in-law, were thinking, he's really going to throw that thing. Most of you were thinking, he's up to something. Right? Nobody, I would almost guess that nobody thought I was going to throw that in that wall and that rod was going to become a snake. Nobody thought you were fixing to see a snake. Hoping you wouldn't see a snake. That's what Moses says here. Moses is saying to God, he says, suppose they don't believe me. You want me to go to them and tell them that you have spoken to me? What if they say, God hasn't appeared to you? God hadn't told you this stuff. I remembered I know it was supposed to be a funny story. I'm sure it wasn't true. Years ago, there was a gospel group called Wendy Bagwell and the Sunlighters. Everybody ever heard of them? Ted Gibson, me and Ted and Don. Wendy Bagwell. I think her name was Wendy Bagwell and the Sunlighters. They sang, and he was supposed to be kind of funny. You know, would tell funny stories and stuff. And one of the things that he told was this. They were Baptist people, you know, so you know how Baptist people are. And they were at a Pentecostal church in the Smoky Mountains. And they said they were there. There's a huge crowd of people there, and they'd sung a little bit, and then all of a sudden they got out the snakes. And he was, and his group was kind of over here, and the people were up, you know, carrying on. There wasn't a way in the world you could have got to the door. They were ready to leave. And he turned to one of the group members, and he said, we can't get out. He said, is there a back door back here? And the guy said, I don't think they have a back door. He said, where do you reckon they want one? That's kind of like we are when some of these things happen. God tells Moses, what is that in your hand? It's a rod. And God tells him, throw it on the ground. So he throws it on the ground. Now here's my first point on the outline. And I hope you don't take exception with my point. I want you to hear it. It is not wise to believe without good reason or faith, unlikely or supernatural claims. Okay, let me say that again. Susan tells me I need to repeat these twice. It is not wise to believe without good reason or faith, unlikely or supernatural claims. Now, let's look at what my statement is saying. I'm saying, first of all, it's not wise. Now, take out the what's in parentheses. It's not wise to believe unlikely or supernatural claims. If you leave out the other phrase in there, that's what it says. It's not wise to believe unlikely or supernatural claims. Most of the world, secular world, lives there. I'm inserting a phrase there that qualifies that statement without good reason or faith. Moses says, if I go to them and tell them that you just said so, they're going to say, God hasn't spoken to you. Who ever heard of such a thing? Does Moses have one or two of those things, good reason or faith, to believe these supernatural claims? First of all, he has good reason. Because I just read you 10 or 12 things that God said he would do. He has reason to believe God is going to do it because God said he would do it. He has faith also because Moses knows some things about God. So what is Moses' problem? Let me give you, it's faith. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about from my own personal life. This is not anything profound. When I was 13 years old, I had a bicycle. It was a banana seat. Anybody know what a banana seat on a bicycle is? Banana seat, it had kind of high handlebars. All right, and I rode that bicycle who knows how many miles a day. Rode it all the time. Got to where I could ride a wheelie, you know, apart from here that wall maybe or something, you know. Would ride it. We lived in a trailer park in Heber Springs. Aromatique is there now behind F.L. Davis. Everybody know where that is? That road there beside F.L. Davis that goes back to Aromatique, that road's been there a long time. From that road through F.L. Davis, through the Ford place, all the way to the big house they tore down to put in the Sonic, was the airstrip. That was the old airport. There was an airstrip there. When we lived there, that was a concrete, abandoned airstrip. Anybody remember the airstrip? I'm the oldest person here. I rode my bicycle miles up and down that airstrip, timing myself, going through a I was imagining myself a race car or motorcycle racer and had a loop that I made and had my watch and I would time myself seeing if I could do it faster and faster and faster. So anyway, that's how I spent my time. One day my dad told me, he said, a statement, I can outrun you on foot and you on that bicycle. I said, you got to be kidding. Ain't no way you can outrun me. Me on a bicycle and you on foot. He said, I can. I can outrun you. I didn't believe him. My dad, I don't remember ever seeing him run. So that's okay. So we lined up. He's here, and I'm here on a bicycle, ready to go. I said, how far are we going to go? And he told me a distance. It's be about the equivalent of going from here to the church sign. I think that would be about right. I said, okay. And my mother was there, so she's going to say go. And so she says, one, two, three, go. We took off. What happens? He can get from a standstill to his top speed quick. How long does it take me to get from a standstill faster on that bicycle? A little bit. He beat me to the sign. Now, I had reason to believe he could do that from that point on. because I understood some things I hadn't thought about. Now, if we'd have been racing a quarter mile, I'd have beat him. But he knew what he was doing. I'm going to pick a short enough distance that I can get there before he gets his speed up. Right? Okay. To me, that claim seemed so unlikely, so ridiculous, until I had reason to believe it. It's the same with any claim. It may seem so unreasonable. It may seem so fabulous. But if we have good reason to believe it, we can believe it. Sometimes we may not have the reason. God may not show us the steps of the reason. Sometimes it may be a matter of faith. In Moses' case, I think perhaps it was both. Sometimes this faith is not a sudden thing. Sometimes it's a process. Sometimes it's a work in progress. It seems like, and we'll get to this a little bit later on in our chapters here, but it seems like the children of Israel were kind of wondering, is this really going to work out? But it seems like by the time they got through the locusts and the flies and the fire and the hail and all the stuff, and they got to the blood on the doorpost, and they put the blood on the doorpost, they were in. They were there. Point number two. God can give you faith and or reason to believe that which you ordinarily wouldn't believe. God told Moses, you've got a rod in your hand, throw it on the ground. So Moses throws it on the ground and it becomes a snake. And the text says Moses fled from it. What kind of snake do you think it would have to be that Moses would flee from it? Any kind of snake, right? For me, any kind of snake would be good. I'll keep my distance. I don't know what kind it was, but Moses was fearful. What was Moses afraid of? Was he afraid of suddenly there's a snake there and a second before there was a rod there? That'd be enough, wouldn't it? That'd be enough to be afraid. If that didn't do it, just the fact that it's a snake, a certain kind of snake perhaps, was fearful. And then God told him, afraid, he's afraid. And God tells him, pick it up. Pick it up by the tail. Would you have done that? Yes, you would. You know why you would have? Because God told you. Go told him to pick it up. Sometimes God will tell us to do things, and there's no choice about it. We will do what he says. Maybe that's the case here. God said, pick it up by the tail. He picks it up, and instantly it becomes a rod again in his hand. And God tells him, if they won't believe just because of your word, if they don't believe that I'm with you because of what I've told you, if they don't believe when you said God said, they don't believe it, then show them this. Or I'll show you a sign, give you a sign. Perhaps they will believe. If they don't believe, he says, Moses, put your hand in your shirt. He puts his hand in his shirt and he pulls it out and it says it's white with leprosy. I'm not an expert on leprosy, but I don't think when a person is first tested for leprosy that it's a full-blown process. I think by what Moses' hand looked like, if you were to take it to some doctor and say, how long do you think this guy has had leprosy? He probably would have said 10 years, 20 years. He wouldn't have said 5 seconds. It doesn't go through that process and to that extent in that period of time. When he made Moses' hand leprous, it was as if he had been a leper for years. And again, that should scare us. It should scare Moses, not just because God.